Hello, Polytopians. Thanks for tuning into the Polytopian Times. I'm your host, Sam, and today I'm joined by eSpark and Razor. So good to have you both here.
Hello. Hello.
Hi there. How you doing, Sam? How you doing, Razor?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah, definitely feeling alive and well. Glad back in Adam after the COVID. Sorry for the delay, everybody.
COVID sucks.
Yeah, I had it too. That's why I missed a couple. It definitely sucks.
Yeah.
Glad to have you back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, folks, today we're going to be talking about Barter. And, there's no reason to hold on too much on the intro here, so let's hop right on in. The snow blows down past you as you climb up the steep slopes of the icy Bardurian Mountains. The gray clouds above meet the midday sunlight filtering down between the powdery snow and the whipping wind. You pull your cloak tighter around yourself and begin the ascent in earnest. The journey from the edge of the Umaji Desert to this mountain range was perilous enough in its own right, a true example of the comparative extremes of this borderland. The going is tough up the mountain, and the snowfall doesn't ease as you go. After an hour or so, you come to the top of the pass and see the snowbound valley spread out before you. Most of the valley is covered in deep pine forest, the evergreens the only break against the endless frozen white. In the few fields below you, there are small green and blue mounds scattered about, Oglefuss berry bushes. The blue Oglefuss berries are the only native growing fruit in the Bardurian tundra and are an essential component of their survival out here in the permafrost. They are used in a variety of foods and drinks and are one of the only available dyes this far north. You head down the road into the pine forest, keeping your eyes awatch and your wits about you. Barians are known to wander these woods, fierce predators with sharp claws and teeth and a dense, durable frame covered in shaggy brown fur. They're terrifying beasts in the wild, but here in the frigid waste, the Barter hunt them for food and use them as fearsome mounts. Nothing makes for more unpleasant surprise on the battlefield than a group of Bardurian riders appearing in a charge of roaring Barians. It takes a certain sort to attempt the tanning of a Barian. You need to have a specially designed comb and to sneak up on an unsuspecting Barian with it. Once there, you'd need to seize the Barian's ear, preferably the left one, and tug it backwards 3 times, albeit gently. Should you survive the encounter, you'd leave with a fierce new companion for life. It may seem to be so dangerous as to dissuade most from attempting the taming of the Barian, but the Bardurians are raised to be very familiar with their furry neighbors. One of their rites of passage is the Barian Night, where young Bardurians are sent out in the forest in groups with a tent to survive the night, example of learning on the job, so to speak. Those that survive the Barians come back as true warriors in spirit, while those that are not quite so skilled or luckily simply become spirits instead. The truly brave Bardurians take things to another level. Those who wish to join their elite military force, the Bergefots, will need to accomplish the nigh impossible. More specifically, their chief initiation involves dressing up like a Barian and sneaking into one of their lairs, then attempting to slay one of the beasts with naught but the claws on the vicious paws of the bearskin disguise. Most Bardurians wind up as a snack, but those that survive make for intimidating, relentless warriors, an essential part of the Bardurian war machine. After a few hours of traveling through the frosty woods, looking over your shoulders for signs of Barians, you finally break through the trees and into a meadow full of Oglefuss berry bushes on the edge of the Bardurian village of Tofark. Tofark is a small place, just an outpost for marauding riders to rest at before going on another raid. The buildings are squat things, constructed out of logs mostly, with the most luxurious buildings built of stone. The roofs are made of some black tile and tar, most with swooping pillars of wood rising out of the peak on either end. Here and there, you spot the skulls of enemy leaders mounted on walls. Uses both a macabre decoration and a trophy of victory. Some Bardurians have taken advantage of the relative heat surrounding their homes and are using their roofs as gardens, the whole space filled with vibrant green crops. Orange firelight glows in every window, the main consistency in the village. No one wants to be cold. You're here to speak with a local Jarl on a business call, hoping to cement a trade partnership through the Bardurian lands without your traders being beset by Barians or Bardurians. The Bardurians themselves are bustling about the village as they do around the square. They're a hardy people, dressed in black cloaks and other thick garments, often with bits of leather armor scattered about their personage. On their heads are the traditional Barter helm, blackened iron domes with a nose guard and 2 great steel spikes jutting out to either side. jutting out to either side, clearly intended to be horns. The Bardurians don't farm as their lands don't support crops, and instead make up their diet through hunting and foraging. This is evident looking at the few merchants hawking wares in the village center. They have a variety of wares, but only Oglefuss berries, rabbit meat, and Barian meat in terms of purchasable foodstuffs. The Gruulak Inn is in the back of the village center, a haven for the village to come together to drink, gamble, and tell tales. It's gloomier inside, but the fires burning provide both some light, more importantly, enough heat to finally allow you to relax. You move past tables of Bardurians drinking and gambling with dice, and reach the bar where the innkeeper is. After a quick conversation, you're informed that the Jarl is out on a Barian hunt, but should be back by nightfall. In the meantime, you're given a mug of Ölfork, an alcoholic drink made out of pine needles, hot water, and fermented rabbit fat. Even the mug reflects the harsh Bardurian tundra, being carved out of a particularly large Barian's fang. With nothing else to do while you wait for the Jarl, you head over to watch the game of dice being played at the nearest table. It's a special game they're playing, a take on the official ceremony used to choose the next Jarl. The process is simple. The candidates are chosen and then each picks a number. Then a large ceremonial stone dice is rolled and the number chosen by fate becomes the new Jarl. It's reflective of Bardurian culture to a T. They believe the will of the gods can be best discerned in moments of chaos and chance, the epitome of this being the heat of battle. Battle has been the chief deciding factor in their history. The Bardurians were one of the earliest tribes to revolt during the Civil War of the Ancients, and they never stopped raiding others once they started. Their first Jarl was chosen before their first raid in a game of dice, much like the one you're observing right now. They aren't a people prone to scholarships. Their histories are sung around the fires by bards, heroic feats and brave deeds being woven into myths and legends for the generations to come. Whilst not being scholars, they are a rowdy, prank-prone group of party animals, and before long you're roped into the dice game, swinging Ölfork and doing your best to sing along with the bard as you wait for the Jarl to return. So, that's a look at the Barder in terms of their lore, and just a nice colorful look at their lands.
My favorite part was that alcoholic drink made of pine needles, hot water, and fermented rabbit fat. That just sounds so tasty.
Right?
Sounds delicious.
It takes a special kind of drink to make moonshine seem like a gourmet option. But, you know, in barter lands, I think you can make anything possible.
Okay, but I'm going to have to take issue with how you pronounce the tribe name, because that is not the way I say it. I say it Barder.
I say Barder too, right? B-A-R-D-U-R.
You put the
I say Barder too.
Yeah. Yeah, me and Razor. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I agree with you, Razor.
This must be something with my Michigan accent, maybe, because to me, I'm saying Barder.
You're saying it like, I have some chickens and you have some logs. Should we barter this trade? We're saying barter, like
with a D, and I'm saying it with a D, not like with a T. If I was going to say barter,
it's
I'd
all
say,
about the accent. It's where the it visible is. Lands.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be my Michigan accent. It's like, here I'm saying, well, let's barter, and you know, I'm saying let's barter rabbits and stuff, but you know, barter, yeah. Yes, we just don't have T's where I come from. good call, though. Well, I mean, that's a look at their lands in a colorful note, but let's take a quick look at the actual details of their lands. So, starting out, their resources are honestly not all that different from most tribes. The big difference is they have 150% the animal spawns. It seems like they have a lot of trees, but it's just because they don't spawn with any farms. Honestly, though, with them, you'll feel like you have more wild animals and food than most tribes, even though you don't have any farms. So it does kind of work out. And you start out with hunting. And I mean, that's nice because that gives you a couple of perks. So being a turn zero tribe, obviously you have a strong economy. And that's a solid perk with any of them. But you also have early access to ranged warfare. You have early access to forestry and a good amount of trees and stuff to utilize with them. And I think those are some solid perks in their favor. They don't really have any drawbacks, Barter. I don't know. Do you guys really think there's anything that's bad about barter?
I think they're the strongest tribe in the game currently. What do you think, Razor?
I think the same. I think they're a very good tribe to start off with. They're very strong, and especially because they were one of the first tribes that I three-starred, just by how strong they are in early game. You know, you can get the jump on the tribe next to you, and then starting with all those bears and all those forests, I mean, you can build up really quick and then grab archery, and then after you get your second city, grab catapults. I mean, you get a very good, strong start. So I don't really have anything negative to say about them, really.
Yeah, definitely have to agree. They are, they're just that good. It's just the way they were.
Yeah, and I would argue that the hunting tech, the branch of that, of the tech tree is, I don't know, it's just everything in there is useful. You know, except for maybe what is spiritualism in there, but we don't have to talk about that. We can pretend that doesn't exist. But really, most you know, do. Hunting, forestry, archery, and mathematics, like all of those are just a really great branch, right, to follow. Yeah. I think, I mean, you could say Imperius is probably a close second, but their tech tree, you know, you got org, which leads to farming and what is it? The windmill tech. I forget what that is. That's not nearly as useful as getting catapults and sawmills, right?
Absolutely not. No, I have to agree. In fact, I think Imperius is actually worse than we thought when we first came into the diplomacy meta. And we kind of covered that on the Imperius episode too. But I mean, like, even as we go further and further, it just comes into like perspective how much they actually kind of lag behind. I really think they're about as viable in terms of turn zero tribes as they were back in version 51. It just doesn't feel like much has changed.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the only way that Imperius has a little bit of a leg up is in big games when you're actually thinking to make allies, right? So if you want a little bit closer access to the diplomacy tech. But in other games, especially like 1v1s, where you're not even going to bother with diplomacy, then it's not as used. Then barter is better. Barter is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that it gives them, it's such like two different play styles there from barter and Imperius in terms of like turn zero tribes, because it puts you on like almost opposite sides of the tech tree. So it can give you, you know, different play style options. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And I mean, one thing you're not going to do with barter is try and rush out cloaks in the early mid to mid, just general mid game. Whereas like, definitely can do that with Imperius. That's one of the few strengths they really do have that, you know, make them different. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, I have to agree with the eSpark. Usually you're just better off with barter, even taking into consideration an FFA where you might go with like a couple of allies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all some good high level looks, but let's talk some more about their strategy in depth. eSpark, honestly, I'm gonna hand this one over to you. I think out of the three of us, you have to be hands down the most qualified to talk about strategy.
Oh, I don't know. I think Razor can give me a run for my stars, so to speak. I mean, my favorite thing to do with Bardur at this point in the game is I get three warriors, and then I get forestry before I claim my first village, and I just go for forestry. I really like to get archers and giants. I basically use my giants in the front and archers in the back, and then eventually I get to math, which can give me sawmills, which gives me more giants and more like catapult support. I don't really like using riders very much with barter, just because there's forests everywhere and mountains and you can't move. I don't know. What do you think, Razor?
So I'll do something slightly different. Instead of doing three warriors, I'll do two warriors and an archer, usually on like turn two or three, like, because I just played a barter match not too long ago, and usually the reason I do it is because usually I'll be in like 15 games with crazy bots, or I'll be or not 15 game, 15 bots, you know, full game. And then if I'm doing multiplayer, I'm usually doing something similar to that. So I'll try to go with something, because usually whenever I try to get three warriors in there, I usually, since it's such a smaller space to maneuver in, it's kind of harder to get them over there. So I'll go with two warriors, get them right up next to the Capitol, and then do like an archer shot, and then let the warriors finish it off. And then usually that works. And then from there, I'll go on to finish off my economy and then go for catapults and then just keep rolling through there. And then usually I don't even have to mess with, I mean, depending on the map type, usually I don't have to mess with like fishing or many other parts of the tech tree until like way later if I'm, you know, getting to a different part of the map. And that's what I like about Bardur, is that they have that such a good tech tree to start off with, or part of the tech tree. And it's really like a straightforward shot. I mean, you don't have many, like, there's lots of options, but I mean, that main path will get you where you need to go.
Yeah, that's a really good point. In games where it's like a big free-for-all or you're playing against a lot of bots, archers earlier on can be helpful. I prefer 1v1s with multiplayer, like with another human. So I usually don't meet my opponent for, you know, at least to like turn six, turn seven. So I don't I don't go for archery right away, but that makes sense. If you expect you're going to meet an opponent like pretty soon, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, it's almost instant.
Yeah, that's in that specific situation, definitely the way to go. I think in general, when I play, I have to agree, I'm more along the lines of what eSpark's talking with the warrior spam early on, a focus on just trying to drive up the economy as far as you can instead. Really don't bother with riders till you can get some roads up, again, because of all the trees and everything, and because it allows you to start using them once you're also at a point where you can build up your economy a little bit, as well as get troops around faster. But yeah, for the most part, it's definitely one of the few tribes where early riders aren't actually the best play.
Yeah. And I really try to focus on getting that first giant. I mean, in any game, really,
right,
that first giant is key, not only because you get a giant, but you also get that monument, the Park of Fortune, which, you know, can help you get another giant somewhere else.
Yes.
So I really love thinking about how to get that first giant. Again, if usually, again, I'm playing like 1v1, so I have more time to go for that.
Right.
And usually, if the game goes on a lot longer, then I will go more into like the climbing, mining, and smithery branch, because I really like using swordsmen.
Right.
Once I'm out of giants, then I need to have some other strong unit in the front and my defenders in the back, and that's when I'll go for swordsmen.
I mean, that's smart. I mean, thinking about the couple of barter games I've played over the last couple of months, you know, it feels like once you've gone through all your fruit and your hunting and your forestry, like, mountains are one of the only reliable resources left to go after anyways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
The other thing I like to do, depends on if the game goes on really long. I just had a game like this in the Facebook League. It was a 1v1. We were both barter. And we both had tons of giants and we had catapults, but I could see, I had a lot of vision, and I could see he just had this line of catapults in the back. And guess what I did? I snuck in a knight. I was like, woohoo, I just brought him in on the side. And then my knight just jinked it, like little dominoes falling in a line. I hit them all. So I, later on in the game, if you're in that type of situation, sometimes you can sneak in a knight to go through the archers or the catapults, and that's just so fun.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing better than a chain kill.
Yeah, that's probably the best counter to Bardur. It's always devastating whenever I get all of my catapults or my lower health units all knocked out in one turn. But it's so satisfying doing it to someone else.
Exactly. So be aware,
it's a
right?
Satisfying moment. Oh, yeah.
So you have to be really careful when you are lining up your archers and your catapults. Be mindful, right? Don't leave an opening for a knight to come in there.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I mean, I guess besides using some knights to counter the range support, Bardur will probably be thrown at some point. You know, always just go with the tried and true general forward settle. I mean, it's going to be really hard to try and apply pressure early on, but I mean, maybe if you can make them contest you for a couple of frontline villages and a ruin or two, you can push them into the aggro hole while you expand around them. That might be your only way to even the economic odds or give yourself some sort of advantage. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to have to fight a nasty attrition war until you're at the point where you might be able to get a knight in to wipe out a lot of their support units.
Yep. Yep. But it's fun. It's a fun tribe. I really enjoy playing it.
Yeah.
It's the strongest tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you had to think, why am I going to play Barter? It's because they've got the best economy off the bat. Yeah. The most potential to dominate. And I mean, honestly, has there been a time where Barter wasn't the strongest tribe?
Yes, I know. Luxador. There was a point when Luxador was the best.
Oh, back when they had the walls and the extra income. Yes.
Yeah.
When Hawthorne was still the Luxodon.
Yeah.
Oh, but Lord.
Hasn't been that way for a while.
Yeah, not since the Nerfening. Oh, actually, that's funny. The Nerfening was the update that started the podcast. That's a fun bit of memory. Anyways, that wraps up today's episode on Barter, folks. Thanks as always for tuning in. And Riley and eSpark, thanks guys for joining as always.
Of course. It's good to be back.
Yeah, this is fun. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good to have you on. And thanks as always for tuning in, Polytopians. We'll be seeing you next week with our next tribe episode. And before we go, I had a couple of call outs. There's been some change around on the Discord, which is a norm. Things happen. And just want to give some call outs to some of our top staff, especially Mars and Yin. Thanks, guys, for all that you do. And definitely got to give Momo a call out there too, as well as Dastig and, you know, really all the great folks over at the Polytopian Times. Anywho, that ought to do it, folks. And until next time, we'll see ya.